Welcome to this episode of the Mycotoxin and Chronic Illness Summit. I'm so happy to have with me today Dr. Keisha Ewers. Today we're going to talk about trauma, leaky boundaries, leaky gut, and the connection to mycotoxin illness. Keisha, will you please introduce yourself to our audience?
Sure. It's so good to be here again. My name is Keisha Ewers, and I have a PhD in sexology, and I'm a family practice advanced registered nurse practitioner, or ARNP, with a specialty in integrative medicine. I'm a psychotherapist, including using plant medicines for healing trauma, MDMA certified psychotherapist, and a certified conscious dying doula and the founder of the Academy for Integrative Medicine Health Coach Certification Program, and the author of Solving the Autoimmune Puzzle and the Quick and Easy Autoimmune Paleo Cookbook.
It's so great to have you here, Keisha. I love all the myriad of beautiful things that you have explored in this life and then explore with your patients, what you've learned, what you give to them. So thank you for all that you do.
And thank you. I like you, have a passion for it, right? Yes. That's the only reason we're here.
It sure is. Yeah. Thanks for being here. So tell us about how you came to this work.
You know, I was a 19-year-old registered nurse in a kind of high intensity, high adrenaline. I was an adrenaline junkie, you know, life flight and intensive care unit and balloon pump team. And I just loved all of the high intensity stuff. And I was running marathons and having children and raising four small children when in my early 30s, I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis. And, you know, that was really remarkable because just like my patients will come to me and say, all of a sudden I'm sick. That's how I experienced it too. And of course we know that's not true. It's not all of a sudden. It takes a lot of years to have a fully developed ICD-10 code, you know, illness, right? It takes a long time to get there. Exactly. to have that diagnostic code attached to it. But I had been imbalanced for a really long time and just didn't know the language that my body spoke in. I didn't realize that it had been trying to tell me over the years. I used a lot of Advil. I took Accutane when I was 19 for acne. You know, I would use antibiotics for repeat kind of chronic ear infections and strep throat. So I was always treating something when I would get run down. I would get an instant sore throat. I'd get pain in my feet because of all my running, and I would just pop Advil. You know, so my body was trying to tell me that it was having troubles. And I just didn't listen to it.
You were only 19 when it started.
Well, yeah, between the ages of 19 and 30 until I was diagnosed with RA.
Okay.
Yeah. And I had four kids in that period of time, and I had to have my gallbladder out because I had cholecystitis. And, you know, I mean, just a lot of things happened. I had my tonsils out in that period of time. And it was all in the sort of Western medical paradigm, right? Like, this is causing you trouble, so let's take it out instead of what's going on underneath it all. And, you know, what can we do to get to the root cause? That wasn't even in the language of what, you know, I'd been trained in. And so, you know, I didn't realize that all of these were signs of an imbalance that my body was trying to get my attention with. So I, you know, when I was diagnosed with RA, I had gone in that morning, I'd woken up just overnight with 10 extra pounds of puffiness all over my body and my joints. And I was red and inflamed and a lot of pain. And it was like someone had just taken the batteries out of the Energizer Bunny. That's what my friends used to call me, was the Energizer Bunny. And so I went in and the doctor said, you have a history of autoimmune disease in your family. And I said, well, my grandfather, I think, had rheumatoid arthritis, you know, and my grandfather died at the age I am right now. I just turned 57 yesterday. And this
happy birthday, Keisha.
Thank you. Yeah. And when he died of this disease in a wheelchair. Right. And so she said, well, that's what you have. And, you know, like here are two prescriptions. One's for methotrexate and one's for a very strong non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug come back when you're worse, not if you get worse, and we'll change your meds, right? And I stopped her. I said, well, hang on just a second. Is there anything else that I can do? I'm very disciplined. I make my own food, you know, I'll do anything. And she said, no, it's genetic. Like, that's it. So I just remember driving home and thinking, there has to be a different paradigm out there somewhere than this one that has a different answer to the question I'm asking. And so I started exploring. And so that's how I really got into this. I found a PubMed article on yoga and autoimmune disease, went to my first yoga class the next day. And the yoga teacher said just enough about this word Ayurvedic medicine. And I went home and researched that. And the internet told me that Ayurveda 10,000 years ago said that autoimmune disease is undigested anger. And I remember sitting back in my chair and thinking, I'm not an angry person, and yet I have an autoimmune disease. And then realizing that maybe that was actually part of the issue, that I didn't allow anger. I didn't recognize it. I wasn't able to track myself. And it was just all being stored in my body. And that maybe I was very disconnected from my, you know, my head from my body. And maybe this was part of my problem. And so I learned to meditate and started training to become a yoga teacher. And in that process, I remember having the word autoimmune just kind of dancing in front of my third eye space one day when I was meditating and thinking, like, autoimmune, looking at this word, you know,
yeah,
that means I'm attacking myself.
Right.
Right. That means I'm killing myself, literally. And I just remember thinking, well, when's the first time I wanted to die? Like, why am I killing myself? Because I don't want to die right now. And so that was a very important way of framing it for me. And as I went backwards in my meditation, looking for that time period that maybe I did want to die, I found a 10-year-old little girl version of myself that was being sexually abused by the vice principal of the elementary school.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. And I remember looking at her and thinking, oh, she wanted off the planet. She wanted to die. And my dad was out to out to sea in the Navy at that time. I tried to tell my mom that something was going on, but I don't think I had the right words. And, you know, I just didn't know what to do and was confused. And so I remember looking at that little girl and going, oh, I'll bet that this time period has something to do 20 years later with what's happening right now with my body. And sure enough, science tells us that that's true, that it absolutely is connected. And so luckily what I did was dive right into trauma healing because I realized it had to be connected. And within 6 months, my RA was gone and it's never been back.
What a moving story.
Yeah. Yeah, sad people and beautiful will hear that moment. And they'll say, oh my gosh, that's a moving story. That's a terrible story. And then they'll say, like, if they didn't experience sexual abuse, and I'm just praying that no one that's hearing my voice has. The unfortunate truth is 1 in 4 people have that are reported, right? Which means there's more. But the thing of it is that story includes what we can call a capital T trauma. But there are lowercase T traumas too. Every human has had trauma. So sometimes when I tell that story, people will think, well, I had a really good childhood. I never had any of those things happen to me. So this isn't relevant to me. And I just want to kind of bring everyone back into the conversation and say, it's relevant to everyone because wherever our bar is set, our level of trauma is the worst trauma we've ever had. Right.
It's part of the human condition, whether it is sexual abuse or some kind of psychological or emotional abuse or self-induced.
Yeah.
Right. It's something that's happened to each human. It's the Buddhists say every human is suffering. We're all in the same boat. The suffering might look different. It does look different for each person, but we do have that in common.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's exactly true. And research tells us, you know, with looking at, there was a study that I looked at in my doctoral work, where I went, oh my goodness, you know, because I'd already seen a lot of PET scans of brains, fMRI scans, looking at brain architecture changes to in response to trauma that had been diagnosed as post-traumatic stress disorder. So, in, you know, a diagnostic code of PTSD, this is what the brain looks like. It's kind of like the old 80s commercial, this is your brain on drugs with the egg dropping into the frying pan, right? This is your brain on trauma, right? That's, and the scans were the same, like for every human that had had PTSD that was scanned, there was some form of a shrinkage in the prefrontal cortex up here, which is your adult brain that helps you make executive functions, like who to hang out with, how to spend your money, what to eat, like, you know, all of your day-to-day adult functioning. And a growth in the child part of the brain, the limbic system, in the right-sided amygdala, like the volume was increased in that limbic system of the amygdala with PTSD. Well, a study showed that when they gave the participants a personal stress inventory to take, you know, that's the one where you say, have you moved in the last year? Have you gotten married, gotten divorced, gotten a job, gotten laid off, had children, had been empty nested, you know, like all of it, right? All of the normal stresses of a regular human life.
Right.
When people reported themselves as being chronically overwhelmed and having a high personal stress inventory, which there's not a human in my world that, you know, that comes to see me that doesn't have high perceived stress.
Me neither.
Right. It's kind of the life that we've generated in our era.
Right.
And it's very fast paced. It's very productivity oriented. It's very achievement oriented. And, you know, it's very materialistic. And so that actually changes the brain architecture the same as PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
If you think of yourself as overwhelmed and overscheduled, you get the same brain changes as somebody that has PTSD. It's crazy. That's the lowercase t trauma.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It makes so much sense because we all have these stresses and they're cumulative.
Right.
Some of us from the time we were born all the way up. And so it's right. Like this constant effect on our brain's neuroplasticity, whether it's a capital T or a small t. We could have many small t's and they add up and can equate a few large T's.
Exactly. Exactly.
Biochemically, physically.
Right. So then that increases so you have this perception that you're stressed out all the time, then your brain messenger chemicals, your neurotransmitters will send the message down to the adrenal glands that you're a zebra being chased by a lion and you're about to get eaten for dinner. The adrenals will respond as if you are a zebra being chased by a lion and about to get eaten for dinner. So cortisol goes pumping out into your system. Your reproductive hormones come into silence. Your digestive system comes into calm and quiet. And you have cortisol going out there to increase your heart rate, increase your blood pressure so that you can get away from said lion. But you know, if we're constantly perceiving ourselves as unsafe, not good enough, not beautiful enough, not smart enough, not whatever it is, not safe, mm-hmm. not safe, not safe, not safe, then what will happen is that cortisol will break down the lining of the gut. So you wind up with leaky gut. And if you wind up with leaky gut and that immune system, which is supposed to do this, it's not misbehaving. It's supposed to go after anything that it reads as not you. So then foods that you eat a lot are coming through that gut wall. The immune system is marshaling an attack against this thing that it's reading is not you, which could be blueberries, broccoli, salmon, and coconut oil, right? And you wind up being, you know, hyper reactive with your immune system. Well, guess what happens when you're exposed to mycotoxins? You're going to, you know, have an exaggerated response to it.
Yes.
Yeah. This is where mast cell activation happens and intolerance to chemicals and histamine.
Yeah. And then there's research also that shows that stress causes immune dysregulation. So we have people who have
Dysregulation.
Yeah, exactly. A hyperactive immune system with the mast cells and the autoimmune condition. So ties it right back to what you started talking about the autoimmunity and the stress. Then at the same time, they're not able to mount the appropriate immune response to kill off the infections.
Right.
And so we loop it back to one of the most important pieces being trauma, whether it's big T or small T,
right?
Cumulative effect over time.
The way that I always think about it in my mind, because I'm very visual, is I used to play chess with my dad. And
mm-hmm.
you know, if you keep leading with those pawns, it's like your lymphocytes, right? You uh-huh. keep throwing them into the fray to fight off broccoli.
Right.
Then when the big bad guy comes along, COVID or Epstein-Barr or herpes, you know, or chicken pox virus, and mm-hmm. you wind up with, you know, this varicella with, or lovely shingles, right?
Right.
And there's nothing left on the board. Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. It's so many different illnesses can come about then at that point,
right.
Because it's true. It might sound, telling the audience, it might sound like we're joking when we talk about being being sensitive to broccoli, but it's true. There are a lot of patients out there who are sensitive to yeah. the things that are supposed to be most benign.
I'm not joking. Like, this is what I see day in and day out in my exactly. practice, and people will look at their food sensitivity tests and say, well, I thought sweet potatoes were supposed to be good for me, or I thought coconut oil was good for me, you know? And the problem is that when you have a what's good for you list that someone's written in a book, you know, a functional medicine book or a blog post, your body has its own individual reactivity that's going on. And so, you know, there's really nothing that your body is going to say is good for it if it's got this whole immune dysregulation going on. You know, it's barking and biting first before asking questions. And so that's what we want to do, is we want to calm it down.
Right.
So we ask questions first.
Yes. So it's not a one size fits all treatment yep. protocol
right.
at all. Not at all. So we're really doing personalized medicine here, working with patients in their food reactivities, but also taking it even further. Where does the trauma lie, and how do we heal that while we're working with the biochemistry of the person as well?
I mean, it all really starts like that cortisol response from the adrenal starts here, not down mm-hmm. in the adrenal glands, right? It
right.
starts with perceptions.
Right.
And so working at that level is essential. Like, sometimes practitioners will specialize in teaching emotional freedom technique, for example, or somatic body healing, trauma release exercises, shaking, different things, you know, breath work. These are all fantastic to relieve that overload in the nervous system. However, if we're starting with vagal nerve toners, you know, things like this, we're missing it, because we have to start here with what is even activating it. Can we stop the activation process in the first place rather than trying to slow it down? You know, so that's where I see a lot of this going awry. It's great to stop your nervous system from getting overwhelmed, but what about preventing it?
Right, right. So tell us about ways that you begin to help patients heal their past childhood trauma.
Yeah. So one of the ways that I work with people is to first explore what were the meanings and beliefs they created in response to working inside, growing up inside of their family or caregivers of origin, whatever that looked like for them. And we really just start exploring what are the meanings that each person made up about these different events that occur on the human growth and developmental, right?
Mm-hmm.
Chronicle line, you could say. We're not linear. And so the way that I always think about it is, because we're not linear and quantum physics tells us time is not linear, the person that we're going to be when we die is available to the person we were when we were first born. And mm-hmm. so wherever we heal trauma in this moment, we're healing the past and the future.
Mm-hmm.
And that's powerful. Okay,
I absolutely believe that too.
Biocentrism,
yes.
Biocentric design.
Yes.
And quantum physics. There's a great book by Robert Lanza called Biocentric Design that's really great that shows the scientific proof of that, right? Where a lot of mystical spiritual practices throughout time have said that now our science is showing it, which is very, very cool. So I start with where you are today. You don't have to go back and relive trauma. You don't even have to remember it. I start with what's going on in this moment today that might be getting in your way. Do you have unhealthy relationship patterns or relationship? Do you have an unhealthy relationship with your body or with food or, you know, your aging process, whatever it is, whatever's going on? We start there, and then I help you unlock, you know, what the pattern, where it started. And then we heal that part where it started, and then it unfolds itself. It unwinds.
Yeah, I love the starting with today, because a lot of the times people think that they need to relive their right. past trauma in order to heal it. But I think it's really important to meet time as it comes to us. Right. And so people do spend a lot of time living their life in the rearview mirror. What happened? But what happens when you're looking back like this and you're trying to move forward, you're just going to keep crashing mm-hmm. into the same patterns that you always have been.
Wherever you go, there you are. Yeah,
exactly. So meeting time as it comes, knowing that is going to heal the past and heal your future, because now you're shifting your patterning so that you don't have to live in that certain way. And I love that you brought the word patterning, because people don't recognize patterns until maybe we help point that out to them.
Right. I mean, you know, you're surrounded with a pattern behind you, right? And your sweater is made from a specific pattern, and your earrings have a specific pattern. And, you know, I talked about chess earlier. The chessboard has a specific pattern, and then the pieces go on the chessboard in a very specific pattern. And once you learn how to be good at pattern recognition, you know, you start to understand that these patterns are, if you just change one part of it, it changes the entire thing. So going forward, So you just have to make one little adjustment, you know, and all of a sudden you have a different pattern.
Right. And then when they change the patterning of their mental and emotional state, their physical does follow. Yes, we need to help them with medicines and herbs and other therapies, but often the healing starts first in the mind and the spirit. For sure.
That's interesting, because I often will get an email or a question on my Facebook Lives weekly about what should I start with? Should I start with my body or should I start with my mind? And uh-huh. my response is always the same. There's no way to separate them. So if you have a terrible adrenal fatigue and gut dysbiosis and you don't address that, then whatever therapy we're doing won't stick. If you aren't addressing the mental emotional patterns, then it doesn't matter. You can spend a ton of money on supplements and food protocols for the dysbiosis and the adrenal and hormone imbalances. But if you're not addressing this mental emotional piece, then that won't stick, and you'll just keep having to stay on the same stuff over and over and over again. So you have to bring them all. I call it the four corners of the puzzle. They all have to be dealt with at the same time. You know, that your toxic load and burden that's in your mind, your heart, your body, and your spirit, and then your gut health and all of the microbiome, and then also your stress and trauma. And those all three will impact how your genetics express themselves.
Exactly.
And so those four all have to be really looked at and brought along together.
What do you tell people when they say, oh, I'm fine emotionally. Mm-hmm. I don't need help there. How do you open that door?
I usually say, if that were true, you wouldn't be sitting in front of me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because your body is the canvas of the mind.
Exactly.
And I mean, I want to repeat that again. Like, your body is the canvas of your mind. So you don't have disruption in your body unless you've got some kind of patterning going on mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. So that all has to be looked at as a holistic view.
Right. You know? And then it's not to say that anybody is not good enough or it's anybody's fault. It's none of that. It's just
no, in fact, it's the opposite of that.
Right. Human. You're human, and that is part of being human. It's part of the experience here of being in this body on this planet with these.
Well, for the first 26 years of your life, you don't have that prefrontal cortex in your brain fully developed.
Right.
And so when you're going through your human growth and developmental stages as a child, then you know you're born into a world that's governed by adults, and they're teaching you how to become an adult by influencing you and teaching you their value system,
right,
and then telling you if you're doing it right or wrong or if you're good or bad. And so as you're growing up as a small one with no autonomy and no power, trying to be good, trying to do it right, trying to figure out how to become a big human in this world of giants.
Mm-hmm.
And you're always going to make up meanings that are self-centered because we're narcissistic until we're 26 years old, just by definition. It's the way we're supposed to be.
Uh-huh.
And so any meaning you made up as a child needs to be reevaluated in adulthood with a fully formed mind and brain, because you may have, like when I was 10 and going through that sexual abuse, the meaning I made up in response to that was, I have to be perfect if I'm even going to survive this, because this vice principal is telling me it's because I'm a bad kid. And so the behavior that I used as an adaptive response at a 10-year-old developmental stage was perfectionism.
Right.
So I have to be perfect. And so when I was 30, I was darn perfect at being perfect. I drove myself like nothing I've ever seen before. I drove myself to perfection.
Uh-huh.
And of course, that's not a tenable way of living life, and it's not a good formula. And so it's impossible to attain, first of all. And so if I believe that if I'm not perfect, then I'm not going to survive, then indeed every time I'm imperfect, then my survival issues are going to go off, which is not a tenable way of living life. And my body proved it to be true. So what I had to do is go back and reevaluate that and make that realization and go, oh, right. And so one of the ways that I self-soothe that constant drive for perfectionism and that constant nervous system overload of panic and terror of being at school was my mom made beautiful homemade desserts every night for dinner for us. And when I would get home, they'd be cooling on the counter and I would have a piece of whatever it was that we were having for dessert after dinner as my after school snack. And that signaled, like the sugar hitting my system signaled safety.
Right.
So then I made that connection in there. So then you can't go along, in later on, 10 years later, 15 years later, 20 years later, and say, okay, so now I'm just going to quit sugar.
Right.
That's not going to work.
No. Right?
The motivation that's underpinning it, right, has to be healed. And so I was a huge sugar addict when I was diagnosed with RA. And so, all this had to get healed at a root level.
Right.
The kernel of the pattern.
Right. I call these fundamental childhood decisions.
Yep.
So we make them in these moments of our trauma, whether it's a big trauma like what you went through, Keisha, or something that somebody else might consider small.
Big for them.
Right. It was big for them. And then we need to find ways to self-soothe, especially when we're little. So we find those ways.
Right.
I'm going to be perfect. And oh, that sugar, it makes me feel safe. It reminds me of my mom. And so we develop these patterns and we hold on to them. But those patterns, they serve us in those moments. Of course, it served you in that moment to have that slice of sugar and to drive yourself to perfection. It was the tool you had at that time. But then as we get older,
it's outdated.
And more experienced in the world, we still trail along behind us our fundamental childhood decisions. but they likely don't serve us in our adulthood anymore.
Right.
And that's when we start to see our systems crash, the physical systems, the emotional systems, when those that's childhood when decisions
are susceptible to mold toxicity, to our environment. We're more permeable, right, to that. So, I mean, you know, I healed my RA. I'm 57 now, and it was in my early 30s. So, you know, over 26 years ago. And several years ago, it was probably 5 years ago, we had to have our furnace replaced. And when they took away the wall that our furnace was connected to in our basement, there was this like black mold eating and rotting the supporting beams of our house. Wow. We've been living in black mold for years and didn't know it. And it was coming from the upper story, like three bathrooms had it.
Uh-huh.
Our master bathroom and then other bathrooms all the way down. And so we, you know, of course we spent $80,000, you know, having to get it remediated and getting our bathrooms replaced and putting the new furnace in, all of that. But I remember being struck by that and thinking, gosh, you know, I didn't get an autoimmune flare. I wasn't sick. My energy was fine. You know, I was functioning and working and doing everything that I do today.
I love it.
And in my 30s, it would have put me down. And right. So that's what I'm saying. Like over the years, I've learned all of this. My gut is healed. My boundaries are good and strong. And, you know, so it's definitely what I think of as critical mass. Like if there are too many things that are on that scale tipping it, then it capsizes your boat. My boat was nice and stable. So adding some mold onto it didn't do anything. So, but years and years ago, when I was exposed to some mold, I was so sick. I got asthma, you know, I was very sick. Rashes. I used to get rashes around my eyes. Like I could tell if there was mold within 100 yards of me, you know, mm-hmm. back when I had RA. And so it's very fascinating because it isn't just about the SNP you carry or, you know, like it really is about where is your balance? Are you grounded? Are your boundaries solid, right?
Right, yeah. Right. It's not just about this one exposure, not about the one tick bite. Oh, now I have Lyme disease or, oh, right. Now I have a mold exposure. I have mycotoxin illness.
I have a history of Lyme disease and I have Epstein-Barr. I have all of it.
Right, right. Yeah. And so it's about what is, I love how you say that. What's in the boat? What fills it? What's our terrain? Understanding the whole terrain.
Right.
So, you know, it,
and so we redid all of our house, right? And still in the uh-huh. same house. And then a year ago, my dad died on Valentine's Day and this family drama erupted like that week with my brother that I would have never looked for. It was just like so unexpected. And I mean, he cut me out of his life. He doesn't talk to me. So I lost my brother and my dad at the same time. And it was this huge drama that I didn't even understand. He's angry about something that happened when I was 16. He won't talk about it. There's like, I don't even know what's going on for him. And so I lost my niece, my nephew, my brother, you know, like, and my dad, all at the same time.
Oh.
Well, within 3 months, I was ANA positive for the first time since I had reversed my RA 26 years ago. And so, you know, I was not surprised. I did all my blood work and I was tired, you know, of course I was grieving. I was so sad. And I had my blood work done. I did all of the tests I do every year around my birthday and I was ANA positive. And I went, oh my gosh, I know exactly what's happening right now, you know? And so I went back in and started doing some really heavy therapy of being able to let this go, having good boundaries. Until, you know, it took about 6 months and then it went negative again. So, you know, and nothing about my diet changed, nothing like, you know what I mean? It was all trauma. It was all this big emotional stuff, upheaval. So yeah, this stuff, it's powerful, powerful.
So powerful. And then you are living proof to our audience, right? That we can live in our highest potential.
Yeah.
We can, because the traumas are going to keep coming. That's part of life. But how do we keep our baseline clear?
Right.
So that when they do come, we know how to recognize them and then heal them.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you deserve it. I mean, you know, each one of you, you're worth it. You deserve fighting for it. Like, you're worth fighting for, you're worth protecting. And so your current age level and your older, wiser self, right? They're there to support you and love you and heal the one that's hurting, that other part, that maybe unskillful one, you know? And so that's an important piece, is to integrate the one that feels so sad with the loving aspects of yourself. And
right.
So that's another piece that I do a lot with my patients, is help them heal their, not just their attachment wounds from childhood, but really get in touch with the older, wiser version of yourself that can hold space for that when you don't feel capable of it.
Right. A lot of people forget that they have that space, or forget that there is a possibility of self-love in yes. there. And I think that
for it, not just a possibility. If you're going to get well, you have to love yourself enough to do it.
Yes. And so we do work around that. Also, it's the glue.
Yeah.
That holds it together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keisha, is there anything else that you want to tell the audience? Anything that you feel isn't spoken about enough?
I think we've covered a lot.
I think so. We have.
Yeah. I think we've covered a lot. You know, yeah. People often ask me, what's one easy first step that people can take, you know? And mm-hmm. And I like to say, just starting with really watching your language for 24 hours, like watching the words that you use in your own mind about your world, about your life, about yourself, the tone that you use, what's the nature of your language and your discussions inside. And just don't judge them, good or bad, but make a note about it. There's a Buddhist practice that I really love where you take, you know, a bag of dark pebbles and a bag of white pebbles. And at the end of each day, you sit in your room and wherever you've had a so-called negative thought, I always think about it as a thought that maybe isn't life supportive. It's
right.
unloving, right? Mm-hmm. And it's towards others or yourself. And you put a dark pebble on the floor. And then anytime you've had a thought that's life nourishing, supportive, right? Regenerative, then you put a white pebble. And if you do this really well, you'll notice that at the end of your day, you might have a real tall pile of dark pebbles, not very many white ones. But once you bring that awareness and you start really watching for that, you can change your channel anytime in your own thought stream. And right. you can start learning how to make that a big, high pile of white pebbles and no dark pebbles.
I love that, because it's a way to show people that they do have control over their reactions.
Control.
So we might not have control with what comes at us in this life. Sometimes we do, many times we don't, but we have control over our response internally and then externally right. in the world. And once people see that, they get excited. Oh, I can switch that dial. I can change that. I can approach my life differently.
Exactly. And it's a really beautiful, simple practice. And you know, the practice, of course, is to do it without judgment.
Right.